Welcome to the Head Game Podcast, powered by Mindful Athlete Training, where you grab an inside look into the heads and minds of the high performer. Learn what they do and how they think to help you take control of your own head game. Welcome to another edition of the Head Game, powered by Mindful Athlete Training. Today's guest is Ellen Zavian, a freelance journalist for the Washington Post and editor-in-chief of esportsandthelaw.com and mylegalbookie.com. While teaching sports law at George Washington University, prior gigs include the NFL Players Association, the first woman to be an NFL sports agent, executive director of the Women's Soccer and Softball National Team Associations, Skateboarders Association, and Breakdancers Association, an Olympic sport in Paris 2024. She is also a columnist for Condé Nast's Street and Smith's, NFL Weekly, and Fairchild's Branding Magazine. Please welcome Ellen to the show. What do you need to do? What's that really mean for you when you say you do what you need to do? Like, what is that? Is that a stepwise process for you? Is that more of a chip that you just activate? Is that a process? Is that, you know, what is that?
So for me, it's all about prep, and preparation yields the ability to accelerate pretty quickly. And if I can spend a great deal of time prepping, then something kicks in my head and I'm like, I'm good. There's no one that's going to out-prep me. And I sort of see it as running up the mountain. And once you get to the top of the mountain, it's just a game.
So explain that to me. Tell me a little bit more about that. I find that interesting. You're using the mountain analogy, you know. Once you get to the top, you recognize it as a game, but no one's going to out-prep you. So is that work ethic? Is that something that you learned when you were younger, when you first decided that you were going to get into the industry that you are?
So I sort of look at things like a three-legged stool. There's your intellect, your spiritual side, and your physical. And if you can balance the three legs as much as possible, it's never perfect, then it's pretty hard to beat you. Because most people, you know, if they're not physically fit, that tilts one leg. If they're not mentally fit, it tilts one leg. And so my goal in striving my whole life is to be a bar stool that can stand up pretty sturdy. And that means that you have to have discipline. And I've always had discipline. I can't say why I've had discipline. I think you're just born with it at times. But I know my brother and sister did not have as much discipline. So I'm not sure if it's in our DNA. But I've always been quite focused and driven. And so with that in mind, if I see what I want to do, for me, it was go to law school. I did everything possible in those three legs to get there. And when you're studying, if you're not physically fit and intellectually fit, it doesn't matter. You're still coming in lopsided. And if I negotiate with somebody that I don't think is at the top of their game, I feel like I have an advantage. And that advantage is not a negative. I don't feel bad for them. I just feel like I've disciplined my whole life to be in that spot, and I'm going to take advantage of it.
Does that discipline ever, you know, maybe as a young aspiring law student, you know, did it ever waver? Did it ever, do you ever have a moment where you were derailed from that goal? And if so, you know, how did you find your way? And if not, what allowed you to maintain that discipline throughout that process?
So the only time I can think where I perhaps, you know, wavered was when my mom got sick and passed away. But at the same time, I was incredibly disciplined in working her out, feeding her correctly. Like, I wanted her three stool legs to be perfect. And so if I don't have the perfection and I can transfer it to the person around me, then I'm also good. As far as how I put things in perspective, I think that matters too. So for me, you know, after my mom passed, there was a moment where I said, throw it at me. Nothing could be worse. I'm all good. And my friends used to say, you know, what makes you so tough? I'm like, I've been to the mountain. So everything else is in the valley. But you have to gauge somebody's character when they're in the valley. You can't gauge a person's character when everything's going well. And so the answer to your question is probably had a great childhood, always disciplined. I was a ballerina, so that lends itself to discipline and an athlete. And on top of that, I knew I wanted to be a lawyer and finished college in 3 years just to get to law school. And anything that's just thrown at me, I figure out how to take down the brick wall one brick at a time. Now, that doesn't mean I don't get frustrated. But for me, I had people like Lee that believed in me, and that surrounding yourself with that community of people that won't let you fail or is depending on you not to fail probably gets you through the bumps along the way.
Ellen, you were the first female attorney agent in the NFL. Talk to us a little bit about what that was like pressure-wise. Was it self-induced as it relates to this discipline that you speak of? Was there any time in the industry of you being the first? How did you manage that? What were some of the tools that you found yourself that you were grasping for to stay in the game once you got there?
Well, first of all, naiveness. You know, that's a wonderful tool. So when I thought, okay, I'm going to be an agent and I think I can help players. I've been helping them while I'm at the NFL Players Association. So what the heck? Keep helping them. And I was good at it. And so when I left and registered to be an agent, I didn't think about, am I the first or not? So I'm not the kind of person, I know I hear a lot today that I have to see someone that looks like me to be that person. I'm not that person. What I see is a human being in that position, and I'm a human being, and I could be that. And so I don't need my gender, my race, my philosophy in front of me to say, oh, that's a good position for me. Number two, I had worked with the agents quite a bit in negotiating their contracts. And I thought, they're relying on me. I'm the one that's doing the prep work. And I think I'm a little smarter than some of them. Not all of them, but some of them. So maybe I could play this game too. And the thing that I underestimated was the pressure on my players. I felt like if I could be good at what I do and had a lot more experience than some agents, then all good. But the pressure on my athletes when I was recruiting them, whether it was their girlfriends, their wives, or their locker room friends, and their dealings with, oh, you have a female agent, I underestimated that.
So what's that head game? What are people playing in that back and forth of you being a female athlete? And I also want to commend you too, because I also think most people don't have that mindset. I think you have a unique mindset where you're like, I see a person, I see a role, I'm going to get after it. And I think that's your mentality, but I don't think that's everybody's mentality. So I guess what part of that is, you know, is maybe unique to you, or maybe other people might have, and can everyone get there? But also, you know, what is that head game that you're playing now? You're like, I had this expectation and now I feel like there's additional pressure. Like, what's going in your through your mind as you're managing that, navigating that?
First of all, I think just being a sponge, sitting there and listening and watching people and watching their behavior and understanding their weaknesses is critical. Secondly, if I met an athlete and I immediately thought there's no way they're going to be able to pick a woman, whether it's girlfriend, wife, or character, I kind of got really good at figuring that out. Now, Lee, with you, your mom played such a critical role in your selection process. And your mom and I, like, we hit it off. It was, yeah, she's smart, she's good, nasty, she's willing to do this, let's give this a shot. And so, but your mom, you trusted your mom. You had a lot of respect for your mom. And that also was helpful for me. And it also puts pressure on me because I don't want to let your mom down. Like, that would be terrible. That being said, I don't have an answer for you, Hunter, except my parents taught me I was special, and silly me, I believed. And I think if you just hear it over and over again, you're like, wow, I must be okay. So I didn't.
Do you engage in those types of self-statements? Like, I'm special? Is that a conscious prep for you at this stage? Or say you're all about the prep, and no one's going to outwork you or out-prep you. You say you were raised to believe that you were special, and you sort of adopted that principle. What strategies do you, if any, Ellen, incorporate into staying sharp, to staying mentally fit?
So when I say special, I don't mean more special than other people. I think everybody puts their leg, you know, pants on one leg at a time, and we're all important. What I mean by special is you have opportunity, you have incredible resources. That's pretty lucky, and you should take advantage of it. So my parents both were passionate for their jobs, so I was around that. My relatives all had their own businesses. So good days and bad, failure was okay. Just pick yourself up and get back up. The conversation at the dinner table was real and talked a lot about businesses and entrepreneurship and startups, but we didn't call it that back then. We just kind of felt like this is what we do. And I think partly because my parents, my dad's Armenian and my mom was Jewish, both those races have been through genocide. So there's a tenacity of survival within those two cultures. And this past year, I went to Cyprus to teach this summer. And I had the opportunity to see where my grandmother lived after she was fleeing Turkey. And I could just feel her strength. You can't leave your home, plop yourself in the middle of another home, and not have strength.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, and it is an incredible story. I met cousins I didn't know. But at the end of the day, I come from such hard stock that they risked everything, I am going to take advantage of that and not let them down. And so there is a conversation in my head that I want to make sure all the things that my parents and my relatives and everybody gave me, I don't let them down.
Yeah, that's a powerful driving force too, to take on as well as, you know, this is what my family suffered and went through, but it's also build your resolve. It's something that has also strengthened you. And you mentioned the mountains and the valleys. Pressure, right, can strengthen just as much as it can bend and break. And so it's interesting for you that you utilize that pressure and you took that pressure to become stronger. That really has created a resolve in you, which is, I think, again, a testament to your high performance.
Well, I mean, we all have voices in our heads. And I think the key thing is to sometimes knock the voice off and say, okay, that's very nice of you. But I'm done with you. I'm going to listen to this voice on this, you know, shoulder. And as any athlete going out for a run, excreting your endorphins, getting an outlet is great because the voices sort of calm down. And you can start to think and hear yourself, just like when you're gardening or taking a shower. When your brain is at rest, you sometimes think the best. And that's been proven over and over again. I do a lot of art, mosaics, and stained glass. And people are always like, well, wait a minute, you're a lawyer. And I'm like, yeah, but I need the downtime to think about solutions for my uptime.
I think some people think of that as like a passive reflection, but there's also like an active engagement that you're doing with that. What's really interesting is you're doing it with intention, right? Yeah. It's I'm doing art because it's nice, but you're also doing it with intention to give yourself the space of that reflection. And I think some people miss that. And I think that's a vital message, is really to, you know, you're incorporating something because of your schedule, because you're doing so much. Of no, I need time to reflect. I need time for my brain to have that time. And you're building that in as something with intent. And I think that's something that's critical as a message for people, you know, who want to be high performers or are striving for that, is, you know, be intentional with the things. And that's going to help give you that space.
I would also say being a minimalist is probably what my friends often say about me. And so I don't get all these gadgets and so forth. I just work with what I have and figure out the best way. So in the pandemic, I went out and took out my 1980s weights and started my pull-up bar and all my knowledge of competing, you know, competitive bodybuilding, and work out. I have rubber bands and so forth. And so being a minimalist, you don't weigh yourself down with a lot of stuff. And the stuff doesn't clog up your head. And then surrounding yourself with important things, but not too much, not too many things, just what you need. I think that leaves room in your head to sort of be uncluttered. And then surrounding yourself with people that are good for you. Not agree with you, just good with you.
Ellen, you brought up COVID and, you know, the transition that everyone has gone through is still very much relevant in how people are living their lives and the choices that they make. And you blew the dust off the Jane Fonda workout tapes, you know, and the leggings and the weights and the bands. I guess my question is, so much of COVID has taught us as a human race that the fatigue that we feel mentally can be very disempowering. And when we all try to perform at our very best, I think personally for me, the role that mental fatigue plays is not if, but when, and how intense can it get? especially if you're reaching for those proverbial brass rings or you're pushing yourself. Again, not if, but when the level of fatigue shows up mentally. Share with us your perspective on your own fatigue mentally that sometimes you might feel with your very impressive resume of things that you do, the people that you touch, you teach, you write, you travel, all your involvement with these organizations. What does that look like for you sometimes mentally? And what are some of the tips that maybe you can share?
Well, let me say this. When the pandemic hit, I sort of sat down in my office here, which no one has ever seen, and wrote down, I still have the list up here. What do I want to do during this time? And I checked off every box. So I was very focused on, this is going to be a time where other people are going to fall off, and I'm going to run up that mountain. And I did. I said I was going to get on international boards. I'm on three. I was going to look for a general counsel position that I could be passionate about. I'm at USA Lacrosse as their first general counsel. You know, so these things, I don't know why they don't break me. I just look at them as opportunity. The answer to your second question is like, why with all these things, was your question, when with all these things that I do? So I get my energy from people. Now, that doesn't mean I don't like being by myself. I spend a lot of time by myself. I have to write contracts. I can't be talking to people. I have to read a lot. So I kind of recharge when I need it. I'll like run out and go to a class, recharge, come back. Remember, when you're around students, they have wonderful, wonderful energy. And it's addictive. It's like the world's at your feet and you can solve all the problems. And how would you want to disappoint that student? And you get that every year. Every year you get a different batch of students that give you that same energy. I think the biggest pain that sits in my head sometimes is, you know, if I have somebody I want to help and I can't figure out how to help them, because I like putting people together. As you know, Lee, I'm always trying to introduce you to somebody. And I don't like people that think they're better than another person. I don't like being around that. And so I think as you age, you just pick and choose and you're like, okay, I'm not going to be around you. I'm good. And that's the nice thing about aging. You can get selective. I'm not really good with politics. I'm much better with strategy. So politics gets me a little aggravated because it's no rhyme or reason. It's just greed and ego. But strategy, oh, that's a fun game. And that's really about a mental game more than anything else, but you want to be physically fit and spiritually fit. But watching people when they hesitate or how they think about things, are they impulsive, really building up their character and figuring out where their weaknesses are mentally, that's the best thing about negotiating. It is a people-to-people process. And the one thing I worry about with the pandemic is when you're not in person, you miss so many cues. And can I make up the cues that I'm missing when I'm online? I can openly admit I'm better in person. So the pandemic to me was just an opportunity to explore some new things that I've had on my plate that I haven't had time for. Was it really hard to watch my son be in high school and on my couch? Yes. He didn't have the tools that I have at my age to be disciplined. So what I did was, when they shut down, I got four of his friends together and I opened up class. 10 o'clock in the morning, they had to get up. We had class. And I began teaching them every day until the schools figure out what they're doing. 2 weeks later, I gathered all the parents and said, "What's your expertise? What can you teach?" And they taught some classes. So to me, it's just, okay, there's a brick wall. Let's start taking down the bricks one at a time.
But that's some serious strategy though, right? There's your strategy.
Yeah. So I immediately arranged a lunch pod. So every Wednesday, all his friends came over, ate outside. We had a heater and a gazebo. And I thought human contact is going to be critical. So I look at things and figure out what's in my toolbox, what do I need to go get, and how am I going to make this the best case scenario with what I have?
Yeah, I think that's interesting too, because, you know, there are points in time where we might feel like we have a lot of resources, but in that moment, there was a lot of unknowns and there was maybe a lack of resources. So to use it and say, what is in my toolbox? I think it's easy when everything is at your disposal, you know what's going to happen, or the shoulds line up with the shoulds. As I say, you know, everything's working the way you want. But it's, yeah, it's, I don't have the tools that I normally have. What tools do I have? Let me assess, strategize, and then implement to make it effective. And that's very unique, I think. Again, I think it's a unique perspective. I don't think people think about it in that way. And I think it's really great for our audience and for people to hear about that, to say, be resourceful, be strategic. You know, you mentioned this and it was brief, but I need to bring this up again. How does someone who becomes a law student, also a bodybuilder, how does that happen? Let's talk about that.
So when I was in high school, I was pretty popular, but the girls didn't really like me. I had a lot of guy friends, and Lee, this shouldn't surprise you. I mean, a lot of the athletes I was friends with. And I just didn't really get along with, I don't know what the girls were interested in. I was interested in cars and working on cars, and I had my own car. So my dad made me change the tires, change the oil. You know, my dad didn't treat me like a girl. He treated me like a person. And you're taking out the car, you better know how to fix it. And so to me, that hiccup my junior year where I wasn't liked, I thought it was me. And so I became anorexic. And then my senior year, so anorexic for me was, I can't control the situation, so I'm going to control something I can. And I'm going to control me and what I eat. And then I met this guy who was bodybuilding. He was older than me. And he said to me very point blank, it's easy to be thin. It's really hard to be fit. And I thought, well, I don't want to take the easy route. I want the hard route. And that's when I began.
He spoke your language. Yeah,
exactly. And that was like, okay. That's a competition for me within me, and I am going to be fit. And for the rest of my life, I've been fit.
Where do you think that inner competitor has come from, Ellen, when you tell your stories of people that say things, or you find that strength within that challenge that you see between the person that you are daily and who you want to be? Where do you think that comes from?
Having siblings. I always worry my son doesn't have any siblings, so he's not fighting with anybody except his parents. My brother's sister fought a lot. They were very close in age. And I just thought, well, I'm not going to be stupid. I see what they're getting yelled at for. I'm definitely not going to do that. But I was somewhat competitive. My brother was a good athlete, and I followed him around and thought, I'm going to be a good athlete. And so I didn't look at things as, I don't know if you're born with it or it's so, I mean, you're the expert. I don't know if you're born with it or it's environmental, but I think my siblings had a lot to do with it. And then secondly, my parents had four groups of friends that we hung out with, and they all had three or four kids. And so I was always the baby. So it was survival of the fittest. And there was never less than like eight or seven kids in my household. And I was going to survive.
Yeah, you have to, right? You have to fight for the fight for the scraps, if you will, right? But yeah, absolutely, survive.
And maybe it came from that. I don't know.
I find it's very unique, you know, in terms of that competitive drive. One of the things that you mentioned was your openness and your curiosity, but really it's the opportunistic element in you. So maybe that competitive drive and that opportunistic element, I think they go hand in hand, because it's seeking out what is that opportunity that I can rise up, or I can grab that next piece, or I can drive myself and grow in some way. And ultimately, you know, arguably you're hitting a low in that moment, trying to find control and seek that out in some spot. And now it's that low has now opened you up to a lifetime of fitness that it's hard, right? It's not easy to be fit. And obviously at Mindful Athlete Training, we are always talking about like mental fitness, right? Be more mentally fit. And that is hard as well. It doesn't just happen overnight. It's something that is a lifetime of work to do. And as you do it, you can really start to gain. What did you feel? You know, what did you feel as you started to gain that fitness, as you started to gain that muscle, that strength? What changed in you?
You know, today I played a company game of lacrosse, and I've never picked up a stick, never touched a ball, don't even know the rules of the game. So I think it's also a willingness to be the lowest on the totem pole and not be embarrassed to say, I'm out there. What about you? Are you out there on the limb? Don't know. And you don't get invited to the party unless you show up, and hopefully you show up with some six pack. So I do think that has a lot to do with it. I've always been an extrovert to some capacity. And I know that people that are shyer, it's a struggle. I never was that, so it's really hard. But I feel their pain when they tell me they get anxiety or they're shy. You know, public speaking for me is, I could do it in my sleep.
Now, when we first reunited after many, many years, Ellen, and I read that article in Forbes about what you were presently working on, and I kind of had this full circle moment. I invited you to come visit us and see our lab and just have a better understanding of what we do. I'm listening to you talk, and as you were explaining, I'm saying to myself, there's this readiness to engage factor about you, and it's an intangible. And certainly what the appreciation that you spoke of, the ability to be more selective the older that we get, I can relate to. But this readiness to engage, we talk about mental fitness as an ability to enhance our mental capacity to engage in everyday tasks. And I think about some of the things that you're discussing and the opportunity, if you will, that you give yourself sometimes we can make the argument that that is a nature versus nurture compilation. It's a little bit of DNA. We get something from our parents, and it's a little bit of environment. To all of those high performers out there that are listening, that are saying, you know, what Ellen is speaking of makes so much sense to me. Any tips, any strategies, a path, if you will, that maybe they could aspire to walk on?
Well, I mean, that's so intuitive of you. I mean, I am always ready to engage, try something new. But number one, be a sponge. Just if someone invites you to something, go. You know, I always say I'm going to have plenty of time to sleep when I'm gone from this earth. So let me burn it up now. And so to me, being a sponge and learning and listening and watching people, that's so valuable. Secondly, there's always somebody that is struggling so much more than you are. You have to put it in perspective. I have a girlfriend of mine who's a single amputee, double breast cancer survivor. When you're around her, if you're feeling sorry for yourself, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, that's perspective.
That is perspective. So perspective is really important, and you should surround yourself with things that throws you in that perspective just in case you start getting lost. Surround yourself with minimal things. Don't rely on gadgets or a temporary high, like some people go shopping or whatever it is. Don't take the easy route. Take the hard route. Go for a run. It's a lot more work, but a lot more reward. And lastly, it's only no today. Tomorrow's another day. So if someone says no to me, it's okay, because there's tomorrow. They might say yes. And I'd say those are the few things that I think about quite often.
That's fantastic. And I love the no statement, because I one time saw no as new opportunities, right? So it's just a new opportunity, and every day is a new baseline to set for yourself. And that's really exciting. Thank you so much for your insight, for being a part of this. Are there any projects you're working on or any exciting announcements or any way that people can follow up with you or contact you if they're listening and they're interested to know more about your story or hear more from you?
Well, I mean, first I want to say I'm so excited to watch Lee accelerate, follow his passion, be in the space he's in. He's just perfect for it. If I had a roadmap, boy, I'd be a great crystal ball. Secondly,
thank you.
Secondly, I think the ability to see where you are mentally in sort of like the way you see yourself physically training, but mentally training, is such an incredible path. And don't let anyone ever tell you you're ahead of the curve. And being first, you got to take a lot of bruises. I know. I always tell people.
You certainly do.
I know. I always tell people, I have a lot of bruises. I think I'd rather been second sometimes. So I say, Lee, you're always out there. You had the toughest position on the field. You took all the hits. So I think this has prepared you well. And time will reward you. And lastly, to really think about mental wellness. It's such a hot topic now, but you guys were talking about this for years. And that means you just care. You just looked for a need and the opportunity was there. So for me, if you ask me what's happening on my scale, I'd throw that back and say the biggest joy I could have is that you're successful, you allow people to better their lives and pay it forward, like I always do. And that is going to bring me the greatest happiness I can ask for.
Well, thank you so much for that, Ellen. It's ambassadors like yourself that are really going to get us there and believe in who we are and our message and continue to support us. So for that, I thank you. And I want to give you just a special thanks for sharing your precious time with us. I know how incredibly busy you are. And just from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And I feel truly blessed and fortunate. One, that we met many, many years ago at the pinnacle of my football career, but also more importantly, that we reconnected much later in life to hopefully continue to appreciate and support one another. So thank you, Ellen Zane.
Anytime. So much. Anytime.